This is Scott Berguin of KSOWLP Radio in Cottage Grove. We are talking to Peter Chaberek on the phone. He's an organizer of civil resistance out of Eugene, Oregon, and some very important actions just happened yesterday, November 18th. And first of all, good morning, it is still morning, Peter.
Yeah, good morning, Scott.
It's great to have you talking to us. And basically what we're looking for is to fill us in on what happened yesterday on the University of Oregon campus and elsewhere.
Right. Well, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, we organized civil disobedience actions to happen at government facilities who are responsible for prosecuting the war in Iraq in coordination with the nationwide actions that were happening coordinated by the National Stand Down Day.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same people who organized the protests at over 1,300 sites back on March 19th for the second anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. And it's also the same group who organized the large-scale civil disobedience at the White House that happened on September 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday there were planned actions at a couple of dozen cities around the country, including New York and Baltimore and Pittsburgh and Oakland and Berkeley and yada, yada, yada. There were several, many, many states involved. Here in Eugene, we had about 30 folks participate, and our plan was to get some people into the ROTC Center on campus to stage a sit-in, followed by protesters with graphic color enlargements of war casualties, both Iraqi children who had been maimed, grieving Iraqi parents, and photos of American GIs with missing limbs.
Mm.
Some of us blockaded the doors, the entrances. Seven people were arrested at the ROTC site, and they were handcuffed and taken off to City Hall to be processed. We had a second site that was the Army Recruitment Center on Bailey Hill Road, near right across the street from Churchill High School.
Mm-hmm.
We followed a similar plan. We had four people go in posing as potential recruits and family of potential recruits. They got in and they staged their sit-in, refused to leave, we were able to get the press over there before the arrests were made, and so we got some great photo ops, and we got some really great press. We had a very capable media team, sent out a couple of press releases, and phoned all the local press the morning of the actions. So we had very, very good press coverage. We got we were the top story on the Air America local affiliate here, and a couple of the radio, the local TV stations, the CBS affiliate and the ABC affiliate and the NBC affiliate. We were the top story on that, and we got a good story and photo on the front page of the city region section of the Register Guard.
Well, other than the, I suppose, maybe it's just obvious reasons, the focus nationwide on recruiting stations?
Yeah, recruiting stations and military installations that are involved in the war, obviously, but the recruiting stations were the main focus.
Mm-hmm. And so are the people that have been arrested, are any of them still in custody, or were they released?
They were all processed and released by early afternoon yesterday. They were all charged with criminal trespass and disorderly conduct, and they all have a court date of December 2nd. We are planning a vigorous defense, and our attorneys are behind us 100%, and we plan to make it a bit of a media circus.
Right. And what grounds do you plan to defend yourselves on at this point? I mean, obviously, this is something that's in progress, but.
I believe at this point, we still have to confer with the legal team, but I believe at this point we're going to take a tack of that First Amendment, our First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, especially when people are being killed, trumps any minor charge of trespassing.
Right. Well,
and we were certainly acting in an orderly fashion. So the disorderly conduct is a little lame to me. So the headline of the Register Guard article today was "Well scripted anti-war protest was no act."
Right. So well scripted disorderly. That doesn't.
Yeah, sometimes in the mainstream press you can't win. You know,
right.
If you're not organized enough, then they accuse you of being hippie rabble rousers.
Right. Yes. Well, they seem to like it's kind of like they only want acts that look spontaneous or something. Which, of course, spontaneous acts tend to be totally based on the emotion of the moment and tend to be sort of disorderly. This is just a passing thought when you're talking about it. I mean, it's just something to note, I think, for folks to be aware of, is that there, of course, we know there's the recruiting, there's the war, there's this nightmare that's continuing, but there's also, I had the thought of if one of the people happened to be of Middle Eastern ancestry, or then to think of all the people that are still in jail right now that have been there for years and have never even been charged.
Right.
And have not gotten, and it looks like maybe they'll never get their day in court if things go the way they are.
Right.
Is this, maybe you said this, is this disorderly conduct sounds like probably a misdemeanor charge?
So yeah, they're both misdemeanors.
So likely a day in court would be in front of a judge as opposed to a jury, or is that?
Right.
Okay. And do you plan on doing whatever you can to put the war on trial, in a sense, before that judge?
That's exactly right, Scott. That's exactly right. We're not on trial. The war is on trial.
Right, and so this wouldn't be going in and arguing technicalities. Well, that officer didn't read me my rights or whatever.
Right.
It's right. Well, you know, good luck with that. And I think that's... this is, as you know, perhaps better than me, but I've got my experience with this kind of thing is years ago, and maybe in my future, but it's the civil disobedience part of it. It's that I sense, you know, the personal need and political need to not stand by and just watch this happen.
Right. Well, we get asked that question a lot. Mm-hmm. Why civil disobedience?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of responses to that.
Mm-hmm.
One is that taking straight from Gandhi, he said the job of the civil resistor is, while at all times remaining nonviolent, to actively resist, and to resist in such a way that you provoke a response.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do not provoke a response, then you are not doing your job. So we take that very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
My other response to that question is when somebody who is supportive of us, supportive of the cause, but they ask, well, why do you have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, one person getting arrested doing civil disobedience against the war that appears in the press is worth 10,000 emails to your congressman.
Right.
It's such a powerful thing because it moves people in their hearts when they see somebody taking a risk and being willing to make that level of sacrifice.
Right, and it's always been true that people who step out, take a risk, put themselves on the line to get arrested, civil disobedience, often makes the people that normally are dupes, they'll support them even as uncomfortable as it does the so-called powers that be, and that's part of the equation also,
right.
Moving other people to.
I want to relate a little piece of the story that happened yesterday that that moved me to tears, and it moved some of the hardcore activists to tears. While the first couple of people who were arrested arrested were being handcuffed and they're starting the process of the arrest. There was an older Eugene police officer, and he said, "You know what you guys are doing is really, really important. I'm really glad you're here. Thank you for doing this."
Mm-hmm.
And coming from the police, that was just so moving.
Well, that's that's overwhelming. Congratulations to all of you, because that is it's that kind of moment that is a good part of what civil resistance is about, to open up the eyes again, not just of the people that are perpetrating these policies that need to be shut down, but it isn't going to happen if we can't move the the great mass of American people.
And I definitely saw a different attitude from the press that was there yesterday. Oftentimes they attend the protests that we do or demonstrations, and they look kind of skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of remain in the background. They just ask their questions and do their job and move on.
Right.
And yesterday they were actively seeking us out. They were giving us their business cards.
Mm-hmm.
They were obviously very sympathetic to what we were doing.
Right. So what do you think that is? Is that, my guess is that if you were doing the same action 2 years ago, or maybe even just a year ago, you might not have gotten the same interest or response?
I think people are sensing that the tide is turning here.
Mm-hmm.
The Bush administration is facing serious difficulty. They're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Their back's against the wall, and they're running out of justifications for their behavior, and they're getting revolted within their own party. So people sense can smell a change in the wind.
Right, and I think it's good to point out that it's not just that the propaganda wars are shifting against them more than they were in the past. There's a real substantive awareness,
mm-hmm.
growing awareness of the lies and what is really behind the policies, and not to mention the exposure to the torture and the continued spin and so on. And people are getting it's wearing very thin.
Yeah, I mean, they can only spin things so far. I mean, the truth eventually has to come out.
Right.
I mean, they end up looking absolutely ridiculous when they try to defend a policy of torture in the Congress and in the media.
Right. Right. So what is next at this point, both for local resistors and also for Peter Chiberik? I know you have a trip to D.C. coming up here soon.
Yeah, I'm scheduled to go back to D.C. February 3rd, my court date for the civil disobedience I did at the Pentagon on September 26th. I'm working with my attorney to see if the case can be transferred out here,
mm-hmm.
And deal with it here, so I don't have to make that trip. And there's a distinct possibility that the government may dismiss the case altogether.
Mm-hmm.
They've done that at some previous civil disobedience actions, mm-hmm. at the Pentagon, because they just don't want the publicity.
Right, right. Well, I know the folks at the White House, a bunch of them just had their court appearances, including Cindy Sheehan.
Uh-huh.
And I think she ended up being fined $75, which she is at this point saying she's going to refuse to pay.
Right.
Is that the kind of thing you expect, or is it, I imagine it's just a big unknown?
Well, the charges for the people arrested at the Pentagon will be a little stiffer, potentially.
Okay.
But, again, with the political climate, I think there's a very good chance they may dismiss the thing.
Right. Well, I know that, here we are on the 19th of November, and while we speak, there are people at Fort Benning, Georgia, at the School of Americas, being arrested as we speak. I don't know the exact timing, but I've always been astounded at what the charges are for people who just cross the fence at that a place like that. I mean, prison time, they end up with usually.
Yeah, they get pretty heavy with people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm friends with Peg Morton.
Right.
And she spent 3 months in jail last year for her third offense,
mm-hmm.
doing civil disobedience down there. which, and she's, you know, an inspiration to all of us.
Right, right.
70-year-old Quaker woman going to jail for 3 months.
We need
more like her.
All right, we do, and more are stepping up. I mean, obviously, it seems to be growing.
Civil disobedience is, of course, most effective when we get large numbers of people mm-hmm. involved, and I see that it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
But a large movement starts with a small movement.
Sure. Right.
And one of the magical things about civil disobedience is that if people are strictly nonviolent and they're disciplined and they are determined not to back down, then they set up a win-win situation.
Mm-hmm.
If they go in and do their action and they're arrested, then what happens is it is revealed to the public that the government can only maintain control through repressive measures,
mm-hmm.
and hence the cause of the resistors gains sympathy. If they're not arrested, then what's demonstrated to the public is that the resistors can openly break the law.
Mm-hmm.
And not be punished for it, which encourages more people to come in and break the law.
Right, and perhaps leads to actually shutting down
right.
some of these operations, which, of course,
that's the magical mm-hmm. Insight that Gandhi had,
mm-hmm.
and which has been proven time and time again over the last 100 years. That if people stay strictly nonviolent and they stay disciplined and they do not back down, they win. It happened during the civil rights protests. It happened during the anti-Vietnam protests. It happened during the anti-nuclear protests of the 70s and 80s. It happened in Poland with the Solidarity Movement. It happened in Chile when they got through Pinochet out. It happened in the Philippines, like when they got rid of Marcos.
Right. It's happening in Bolivia. It's been happening in Bolivia currently.
Uh-huh.
Indigenous people shutting the government down against
right.
Privatization and so on and so forth.
Repressive governments, they always look invincible if you don't look too closely.
Mm-hmm.
But they always have more money. They always have more guns. But we always outnumber them.
Right, and they operate on fear. Obviously, they count on people being afraid.
Right,
and it can be very scary.
Right.
So
the magic of civil disobedience is it dispels that spell of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because the biggest sanction that the government can throw at you is, we'll throw you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you get a bunch of people stepping up and say, we're not afraid to go to jail, then it breaks the spell.
Right, right. Wow. So I want to let people know that also another part of your... no one would ever question your commitment, Peter, to resistance. When you're not organizing, planning, staging political statements and demonstrations and resistance and so on, you and another personer have a little political musical duet. Right. Tell folks about that.
Carol Melly and I have been playing as the enemy combatants since about June of last year,
mm-hmm.
and we play at big rallies and political meetings, and we also show up unannounced on street corners or at meetings where we're not invited, and we sing political songs that are both tear jerkers and very funny and sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our own material and covers of other people's material, and we're really excited about it. We put out one album last year that got pretty good airplay,
mm-hmm.
on about 16 stations or so that we know of,
mm-hmm.
around the country, and was enshrined in the world's largest collection of political folk music at Glasgow University in Scotland.
Oh, really?
We were very honored to find that out, and we're about halfway through producing a new album, which will probably have come out sometime early next year.
All right. Well, let's go back. I just want to get back to, I'm guessing, I don't need to guess, that this is an ongoing campaign focused on, right now focused on recruiting stations, but as you said, also military facilities, and that we're going to see more of this in the future, unless, of course, the military industrial complex and the war and everything shuts down tomorrow.
Right. The resistance movement is only going to grow.
Right.
We know from history a couple of things. One is that once a war becomes unpopular to the point that more than half of the country is opposed to it, then public sentiment against the war only gets bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It never goes back. The government can never recover from that.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that in Vietnam. We saw that in Korea. The other thing that the people in the military should remember, if they haven't studied their history, is that the United States has not won a guerrilla war since 1781, and that was on our own soil.
Right.
Guerrilla wars are always won eventually by the home team, and we're not the home team in this one.
Right, and I know they, of course, part of the spin is they want us to believe that what's happening in Iraq, the so-called insurgents, which should probably be more likely called freedom fighters, but they're all these foreigners that have come into Iraq. Suddenly we're against foreigners coming to Iraq, even though obviously the occupation is by foreigners.
Right.
But study after study, and it keeps coming out that, it's mostly Iraqis, and then it's logical. You can't sustain a resistance without popular support.
So, right. Yeah. Right. The Pentagon's own generals on the ground in Iraq are saying the insurgency is no more than 5% foreign fighters.
Right. Right. All right. Well, we'll stay in touch, and obviously there's a lot more to be done, and over the years to keep building, over the next few months anyway, to keep building towards an end to this current madness, and hopefully then resisting the next step, possible step that could be taken. Syria, who knows, what might be planned next. But
right.
I appreciate your spending time with us, and good luck in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Scott.
And we'll see you in Eugene sometime.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
We've been talking to Peter Chabarik of Eugene, Oregon, about civil resistance and the University of Oregon campus and elsewhere in Eugene, and as part of a national campaign of resistance against military recruiters and facilities. This is Scott Berguin of KSOW LP in Cottage Grove. Thanks for listening.